I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Today's the big day, the first total solar eclipse over America in 38 years. And this one's a doozy. In a little over an hour, the moon's shadow will streak across the country from Oregon to South Carolina at around 1,500 miles per hour. Shortly after 1 o'clock, the Kansas City area will witness a celestial event that's truly one of a kind. To prep us for that, we'll talk with scientists, teachers, and a historian to put things in perspective and explain why this is such a special day. So stay tuned as we broadcast live from the campus of Park University for the Great American Eclipse and get you up to date after this hour's news. There are a lot of places you could be today to witness the total eclipse of the sun, and we're fortunate to be here at Park University in Parkville, Missouri. And we won't be alone while we're on the patio at Norrington Center. The university has opened at Julian Field, its soccer facility in the northwest corner of campus, to the general public. Joining me now is the president of Park University. That's Dr. Greg Gunderson. Dr. Gunderson, welcome to Up to Date, and thank you for hosting us up here today.
Well, thank you for joining us. We're so happy you could be here for what is going to be a spectacular event, no matter what the weather does.
Still going to be spectacular if it's cloudy?
It's absolutely. It's the total eclipse of the park, we call it here.
And okay.
It's going to be a blast no matter what.
What's Park University done to recognize the eclipse here, Doctor?
Well, we went out and acquired 2,700 sets of eclipse glasses that we're making available to the public. We had a special event yesterday, and we'll be speaking later today with Lynn Bondurant, who is not only alumni and a member of our Board of Trustees, emeritus, but spoke to a sold-out crowd. And it was really the people of Parkville, the local community, who came out to learn more about what the event is. And so for us, this isn't simply for what is Parkville, a minute and a couple of seconds. It's really been a couple of days of focus on how unique this event is and how impactful it is from a science and historical perspective, not just for us, but for the entire world.
I was going to say, how excited are your students here getting ready for this thing today?
Well, there's a mixed bag. Our science students I've talked to are really excited. They've already got their glasses. They're ready to go any second now. But we have other students that, as we sit here at Norrington, inside we have our Starbucks coffee area. And we have students lined up. They're very excited for coffee this morning that aren't quite yet focused on the eclipse, but I think they will be by noon.
Well, just over your right shoulder, I'm looking at some of your students looking up at the sun. They've got their eclipse glasses. The viewing skyward is beginning here at Park University. What made the university decide to open the campus as a viewing area, Greg?
Well, we have in Parkville one of the largest flat areas that people can come to be able to observe. And we think it's awfully important to be part of our community. Parkville is a great place to be. When you come into town, I'm always pleased to see the sign says home of Park University. So they see themselves very much as our home. And so we feel it's important to share that asset with the community. We also think whether you're a family or an individual, this is a place to get to experience this with others. And so we think these kinds of events are enhanced not just by people talking about the event, but actually having a place to see it together.
I was going to say, how closely tied is this university to the city itself?
Extremely closely tied. We work with them very extensively. This last year, we added an electronic sign at our entrance, and we share that with the city. They post as much information about what's happening in our community as we do. And that sort of reflects the relationship that we've had historically and currently, that the city of Parkville recognizes Park University's largest employer. The number of students we bring in certainly make a difference in the local economy. But we've been here for 142 years, and they see the value, and they hope that extends, and we hope it extends for another 142 years of just a great partnership.
Do you have any idea how many people are going to show up here today, and has anyone been counting as people enter Julian Field?
They will be counting. We don't know for certain, but given the number that showed up, we sold out our event for this a speech about how the eclipse forms and why it's unique. We're pretty confident we will see a lot. As I mentioned, we have 2,700 sets of eclipse glasses, and once we give them all out, then I don't know what we'll do for the next person, but we're hoping to get that many.
I was going to say, those things have sold out all over the metro. You could have made a fortune with 2,700 up here.
Well,
you could have added to your endowment here, you know. Besides routine traffic and routing it, what else has gone into preparing for today?
Well, part of it was clearing our space on campus, adding extra campus safety staff, and working with the city to see to it we were controlling traffic flow. We put up a large tent beside our chapel, and we'll be serving a lunch following that the public can partake in. That's $5 a person. And so that was tremendous logistics to make certain we had a meal available. We felt that was an important part of the celebration. And just train our students. We've asked our faculty to step up their game in the classroom. And a number of classes will be canceled while the eclipse is going on. And students are being asked to not only observe it, but then come back to class in science classes, others, to report on what they saw, how it made them feel, and really incorporate into the academic experience.
I got to ask, is this your first solar eclipse?
This is my first solar eclipse here. I understand the last full solar eclipse that happened at Park was in 1918.
Wow.
And at our university residence where I live was then 1 year old. It's now 100 years old. But because the solar eclipse, the timing moves, actually it occurred in June then. And so no students were here to actually participate. Right. So we know for 100 years here at Park, we've not had this opportunity during the school year. So everyone who's here wasn't there for that. So we figure everyone, it's going to be a new experience.
Good deal. Well, it's a big day. Dr. Greg Gunderson is president of Park University that is in the path of totality for today's solar eclipse. Viewing is available at Julian Field, a soccer facility on the northwest corner of the campus. Thanks for playing host to us today. We sure appreciate it, Greg.
No problem. Thanks for joining us.
Well, much of America is at halt today as a swath of the nation experiences the first total solar eclipse to span the entire continental U.S. in 99 years. Author David Barron anticipated this moment more than many of us. He's an award-winning science writer who once worked for NPR. He's also a former science editor for the public radio program The World. His book, American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World, chronicles our country's reaction to another eclipse, this one 139 years ago. That eclipse, he writes, inspired the country like never before. Here are some highlights from my conversation with him that originally aired in June. David, welcome. So good to have you here.
Thank you, Steve. I'm thrilled to be here.
Why did this eclipse 140 years ago inspire the country like never before?
So the eclipse of 1878 was, this was a total solar eclipse that was visible in the western part of the country. They crossed the Wild West, the American frontier, at a time when total solar eclipses were very important to science, and when America didn't have much of a reputation in science. So this was a chance for American scientists, astronomers,
to pick up its game.
Exactly, to go out to the Wild West, conduct these studies during the total eclipse, and kind of show Europe that we were serious on the global stage in terms of conducting science.
You know, a few years later, the gold rush brought droves of people to the American West. But in 1878, a similar phenomenon happened for this eclipse. How much excitement did it stir? How many people went traversing across the country?
Well, I can't quantify it, and I'm certainly you needed to have the means to be able to travel all the way out there. But there were not only scientists going out to see the eclipse, but there were tourists. There were eclipse tours that were advertised. And the hotels in Denver and Colorado Springs were overwhelmed. People had to sleep on cots in hallways and so forth. And we're seeing the same thing, frankly, in 2017. The hotels are pretty much all sold out in the zone where the total eclipse will be seen this August.
You know, some folks might be surprised to learn that astronomers back in those days were able to forecast this eclipse with the accuracy that they did. Explain that to us. Was that something unusual or not really?
Well, by 1878, astronomers, they knew when eclipses were coming, and they could map the very path where the moon's shadow would fall, which is only usually about 100 miles wide, quite well. Eclipse prediction actually goes back to ancient times. The Babylonians, the Mayans, the Chinese, the Greeks, they understood that eclipses come in cycles. So an eclipse today will repeat itself after 18 years, 10 and one-third days. And they figured out that cycle. Huh. But actually mapping the narrow path of the total eclipse is more difficult. And that astronomers were able to do by the 18th century. So by 1878, mind you, all these calculations were done by hand. There weren't electronic computers, but they knew how to figure it out.
This eclipse happened on a July afternoon in 1878. Just how dramatic did it turn out to be?
Oh, well, all total eclipses, if the sky is clear, are dramatic. You know, I've seen five total solar eclipses. They are the most awe-inspiring sight in all of nature.
But they're so brief. Why are they so awe-inspiring?
Well, so imagine, and you don't even have to imagine because you'll get to experience it soon. The middle of the day, it goes dark. And so not like midnight, but like a sudden weird twilight.
Yeah.
But it's a lot more than that. I mean, before I saw my first total eclipse, I figured, okay, so what's the big deal? The sun goes away. But the paradox is that it's only when the moon blocks the face of the sun that you actually can see the sun, because that's the only time that it is safe to look at the sun with the naked eye. And when the surface of the sun is covered, you see what's around the sun, which is, it's the solar corona, and the word is for crown, and that's what it looks like. It looks like this heavenly crown that's sort of woven with threads of silk. And it just shimmers out in space, and you can see the sun and the planets together. You are literally looking at the middle of the solar system, and it's like space travel. You're on another planet looking at a sky you've never seen, and it is for many people, and it was for me, a life-changing experience.
I was going to say, for a lot of people, this is a moment, this is a meditative moment of some profound sense for them.
Right. And so, I mean, getting back to 1878, back then it was also, of course, a very moving experience religiously, spiritually. You have these scientists that I write about who, their excuse for going to the West was to conduct science, but they would secretly admit to each other they just wanted to see the eclipse because they were hooked. They had seen previous ones in other parts of the world, and they just wanted to experience it again.
Would you go so far as to say this changed your life somehow?
Absolutely. No, I mean, so I saw my first total eclipse in 1998, and I'm a science guy. I've been a science writer all my adult life. I think of myself as very logical. I'm not traditionally religious, but it is a spiritual experience. It just connects you with the universe. You just have a sense of the enormity of space and just the beauty of creation. And it is so brief. So it's like you've suddenly stepped through the back of the wardrobe into this whole fantasy world, and it lasts for 2.5 minutes, and then suddenly you're thrust back into reality, and you want to go visit that fantasy land again. And so that's why every couple of years I will go off to some far, far corner of the earth to have that experience again, and I am so thrilled. I have been looking forward to the eclipse of August 21st, 2017, for 19 years since I saw my first total eclipse.
You know, what's interesting about your book is that the way so many different people reacted to that eclipse. People saw different things. They were at different vantage points, some high up in a mountain, others down low, and you have all kinds of reactions from the colors of the earth to how people felt inside. It was fascinating.
Right. And so, as we've discussed, scientists knew the eclipse was coming. And the general public, for the most part, knew the eclipse was coming. And they were excited about it. And they weren't frightened by it. They saw it as a beautiful natural spectacle. But there was a very different reaction among those people who didn't know it was coming. And there were a lot of folks, particularly in Texas, who were taken by surprise. And imagine yourself out in your farm field on a July afternoon, and the sun goes away, and you look up in the sky, and you see something you've never seen before, which is this golden crown. Well, the folks who were religious were absolutely convinced that this was Christ returning, and they thought it was Judgment Day, and they were terrified.
I can't remember who it was, but someone was perched up on top of a mountain in Colorado where they could literally see the moon's shadow advancing over the earth. What an extraordinary sight that would be.
Absolutely. If I could have been anywhere for the eclipse of 1878, it would have been with those folks who were on top of Pike's Peak. Exactly.
Yeah, right.
14,000 feet up. And although they were battling snowstorms in July and severe altitude sickness on eclipse day, they were able to see the moon's shadow, which was this enormous shaft of darkness from outer space coming down into the atmosphere. And they could see it in the distance rushing in toward them at more than 1,500 miles an hour, like this silent storm that rushed over them. And in fact, because of what I learned in writing my book, that's the experience I want to have on August 21st. So I will be top of a mountain in Wyoming. I live in Colorado, and I'll be up in the Tetons, and I have plans to be up at 10,000 feet looking toward Idaho, hoping to catch the moon's shadow as it rushes in.
I bet you won't be by yourself either.
Oh, there will be. I mean, on that mountaintop, I'm sure there will be hundreds of people. In Jackson, Wyoming, there will be many thousands. And actually, I've got 13 family members joining me on that mountaintop.
No kidding. Yeah. Well, there's a word for all this that accurately describes who you are. It's umbrophile, meaning
lover of the shadow. I mean, that's a fancy word for eclipse chaser.
Yeah. What do we know about the impact that an eclipse, David, can have on people and on animals? What do we know there?
Well, in terms of, I'll start with animals. So animals think it's a weird sudden dusk, and they act as they would at the very end of the day. So birds, you'll see this here on August 21st, in those final minutes before the total eclipse, birds will start flying around like it's dusk. You may see bats come out, fireflies, frogs will start croaking. Chickens, if there are any around here, will go home to roost. And as far as people, I mean, again,
are the animals, is there any sense of fear? Or do they have any sense of something's wacky here?
I don't think so. They're just reacting the way they would when dusk comes on, and then suddenly a few minutes later, it's dawn.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be strange. And then people.
And people, I mean, people react in all sorts of ways. I mean, until you see a total eclipse, you really don't know what you're going to do. People cry, people shout, people jump up and down.
How interesting it would be to be with someone who doesn't know it's coming, as you've mentioned here a few minutes ago. That would be a great story.
Oh, my gosh.
You wonder if there are people out there this time who may not realize that.
That may be true. And I would say let's try our best to make sure there aren't any, because I still think it would be absolutely horrifying. Because it is, even if you know what's happening, when you look up in the sky and you see something you have never seen before, it's this weird, beautiful object, it is just, it is unnerving.
David Barron's new book is titled American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. Just tell me quickly about one of the scientists who headed west. He has a familiar name, Thomas Edison.
Thomas Edison, this is what first hooked me on the eclipse of 1878. Thomas Edison, 31 years old, right after he invented the phonograph and immediately before he invented the light bulb, goes to Wyoming, to the Wild West, to see a total solar eclipse. It's a part of Edison's life that's hardly been written about. And so Edison at that stage wanted to be not just an inventor, but to get respect as a scientist. And so he went to the West to do his own astronomical research during the eclipse.
What's all in David's new book, American Eclipse. What a pleasure to have you here. You tell this story so well. We sure appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Steve.
That interview with David Barron first aired in June. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll find out what science lovers, from area students all the way up to NASA employees, can learn from a solar eclipse. And here's the good news, folks. The sun is out up here in Parkville. People are getting excited for maybe clear skies come 1 o'clock. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. We're coming to you live from Parkville, where the skies have cleared and the sun is out on this big eclipse day. On Friday's program, we heard perspectives from community leaders about President Trump's effect on race relations in America. You can find that conversation at kcur.org and on the NPR One app. Tomorrow, we'll find out how inequality is remaking the American family. And I'll speak with the man who would replace Sam Brownback. That's Kansas Lieutenant Governor Jeff Collier. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. While most of us will simply observe the moon fully eclipsing the sun, a number of scientists and students will be making observations, taking measurements, and conducting research during the brief moments of totality. There's a lot to learn from studying the star that is at the center of our planetary system. One person who appreciates the value of scientific learning is Dr. Lynn Bondurant, the former educational programs officer at NASA's Glenn Research Center. Among his many recognitions are NASA's Exceptional Service and Leadership Medals and an honorary doctorate from his alma mater. That happens to be Park University. We're fortunate to have Dr. Bondurant with us here this morning. And, Doctor, so good to have you here. Welcome to Up to Date.
I'm really delighted to be here.
I'm going to show just how little I knew about what we learned from a total solar eclipse, Doctor. For the benefit of our listeners, I'm going to ask you to help explain some of the things we came across in our research. Here's one. The size of the moon and the sun can be more accurately measured because of the grazing occultation that is visible. What is that exactly?
Well, what that means is that as the moon moves through its orbit, it's near the ecliptic, but the moon can be 5 degrees above or below the ecliptic, and sometimes it comes near a star. And as it comes near the star, it can pass right through it. And if you wait about an hour from the time it enters to the time it comes out, the star is gone, but in the hour it comes back.
Huh.
But a grazing eclipse is where it comes right along the edge of the star, and the star flashes light. Well, so what happens in the case of the sun today, up in Minden, Nebraska, for example, they are doing an experiment that's a grazing experiment related to the sun. And what they have is students with their smartphones, about every 70 feet or so, what they think is the edge of the graze of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And as they do that, they will see flashes of light, which are the Bailey's beads. In other words, and if I might add that the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter has done a limb profile of the moon so accurate that they know every inch of the moon within 6 feet of accuracy.
That's amazing.
So they can now know for this particular shadow, and they put on the topographic map, that for every location on the path, you have a specific shape of the shadow for that particular location. So up in Nebraska then, they will be watching and timing the Bailey's beads. And as they do that, it will provide information whether or not the sun is getting bigger or just staying the same.
Oh, that's amazing. So comparing this year's measurements to previous years, can you find out if the sun is losing or gaining mass?
That I don't know. Primarily what they're doing is they're so much interested in the corona this year and the processes that are associated with the corona and also studying the ionosphere that they're really focusing their attention on that. But I suppose that they could take some of the data that they collect today and see if the mass of the sun has changed and it would affect the orbit then of the of perhaps the Earth and Mars.
So bottom line is there's a lot to be learned here.
Oh, today is a classic day. It's probably no other day in the history of science have you had the opportunity to have the total eclipse of the sun for 90 minutes across a stretch of land, which means then that for that whole time, that whole 90 minutes, you can have different kinds of experiments going on, looking at different aspects of the sun.
So, the Citizen Kate experiment has 68 identical telescopes along the path of totality, Doctor. Each one will pick up the eclipse and take 1,000 high-resolution photos, culminating in a 90-minute record of the sun's inner corona,
right,
a region of its atmosphere. This will allow scientists a better understanding of solar weather. You say this is crucial, and I'm wondering why.
Well, we must understand social weather. The geomagnetic storms are tremendous. For example, today you could probably look up during the eclipse and see a prominence. But sometimes a prominence, the very end breaks off, that's a solar flare, and it sends X-rays and extreme ultraviolet rays to the Earth.
Hmm.
But the sun also sends up a coronal mass ejections, which are tons of solar matter, and with an energy probably capable of 20 million atomic bombs. And it's like a cannonball that they eject into space. And that cannonball it could hit the Earth. as one did in about 1859, the Carrington event.
Hmm.
And in 1859, one hit, and it caused such auroras that they could see the northern lights as far south as Cuba. In fact, in Boston, you could sit outside with your newspaper and read it due to the light of the aurora borealis. And also, the gold miners thought it was morning. But to make a long story short, it also affected the Western Union Telegraph. It got the electromagnetic radiation, and they were getting their fingers burned. Offices, papers were burning. Wires were snapping. And so if we had a coronamass ejection on our Earth, it could disable our power system and put power out. How can you imagine Kansas City 1 year without any power, with no access to pumping water or anything?
Could you, an event like today's spark a new generation of kids to become scientists and teachers?
Oh, yes. If you look at the
There's so much excitement here, it's only natural, right?
It's only natural. And if you look at the experiments that are being done across our country today, many of those students involve students as young as 10 years old, collecting data that the scientists will use to make further gains of our
and
understanding.
He's going to light them up, right?
He's going to light them up. Amen.
Okay. Well, among the many who are viewing the solar eclipse today are students from area schools, including a group from Olathe North High School. They were planning to be in St. Joseph this morning, but last week I sat down with two of the teachers taking the students on this field trip of a lifetime. Here's that conversation. With classes barely begun in most area schools, planning and executing a trip for students to view the totality of the solar eclipse in St. Joseph is quite the undertaking. But that's exactly what teachers from Olathe, Kansas have done, and two of them are here to fill us in on how they've made this happen. Rhonda Reist is a chemistry teacher at Olathe North, and Rhonda, nice to have you. Good morning.
Hi, nice to be here.
Marcia Skozek is the facilitator of the Olathe Public Schools Geoscience Academy. Marcia, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning.
So when did the idea to view the total eclipse up in St. Joe first pop into somebody's head here?
A couple years ago, actually. As soon as we realized how close totality was going to be to Kansas City, we jumped right on that.
You thought this is a teaching opportunity.
Exactly.
Yeah. How many students and how many teachers are going up for the whole thing, Rhonda?
I think we got about 150 students going, and we have four faculty members, five maybe.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
It is a lot.
Yeah. And how excited are people about all this?
Excessively, I would say. And as it gets closer and closer, that's something that the kids are extremely excited about, as well as the faculty members.
You know, Marcia, take me through some of the logistics here, because this had to take some planning. How many buses? Where will you be exactly? And are you partnering up with a school up there? And how will you feed everybody? Run it down for us.
Well, we started planning back in February. I contacted the Parks Department and reserved a shelter at Krug Park. And we made sure that there was a pavilion so we'd have shade. There's restrooms and a nice open space so we could set up our telescopes and be able to see everything.
I'm almost surprised you were able to get that space.
Right.
Given the demands up in St. Joe for watching the whole thing.
Yeah, the Parks Department was very helpful in helping us find a good space for our size.
And how many buses? And tell me about the rest of everything.
We have reserved three charter buses so that in case of gridlock, because I have been in contact with the Missouri Highway Patrol and just we're worried about the highway situation, we've got restrooms and air conditioning and there's Wi-Fi for the students. And so they will stay with us the whole time.
What have you been told about the gridlock and the potential for it?
Right. The Highway Patrol officer I spoke to last month said that we really need to try to be at our park by 8 a.m. to be there in a safe time to beat the traffic.
Okay. Rhonda, how much classroom work have the teachers and students done in advance of this big event?
I think the teachers have done more, and the fact that this is coming the third day of school, we will have very little time to get the kids to do much with that. Last spring, some of my kids, we've done quite a bit of work. My Distinguished Scholar Science kids are going with us, and they've done quite a bit of work with some instrumentation from a company called Vernier, and we're taking some light gathering probes that the kids already know how to use from other lab situations. And of course, you know, we're going to try to image everything that we can, as the whole nation would try to do.
So you got to pack a lot of material into a few days when they get back, Marcia.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So we're going to go over the use of all the veneer probeware so that the students can all be collecting data while we're up there. And not only looking at the light, but also the temperature changes and just kind of getting everything set up with the telescopes and the sunspotters and being able to have all of that apparatus out and ready to go.
I was going
to
say, what else are you measuring when you're up there?
Well, we're also going to be looking at the maybe change in air temperature. We have some thermal cameras yeah. that we're going to take with us. And those work. You can hook them up to an iPad or an iPhone. So we'll be able to image the eclipse thermally and look at the temperature changes. There's an actual temperature reading on that software as well. So the students can look at it both visually and thermally.
How much is the temperature supposed to change?
I think that kind of depends on where you're at and mm-hmm. your surrounding areas. One of the places that we considered going was up kind of on a cliff, and it's closer to the river. And I know that would, just like anything that's near a beach, you're going to get different changes. And so I don't have an answer for exactly what that's going to be, but I know the surrounding area would play into that.
What if the weather doesn't cooperate? What if it's a cloudy, rainy day? What happens
right.
then?
Well, I think
we're
still going to go because we have these buses. So we're going to maybe try to find a place where there's potential for clearing. You know, maybe scrap St. Joe and try somewhere else along the path of totality, or just hope that there's a break in the clouds at just the right moment.
And the good news is one of my really best friends is a retired meteorologist for the National Weather Service. And so Gary's on the ready to help me out with that. And you know, we all carry our own radar in our pockets now. And that's one reason that we wanted charter buses that we had. We were self-contained. And if we needed to divert, we will divert.
Yeah.
And we watch the weather closely.
Yes.
Hey, how do you foresee spending your time with the students during this day and getting them ready for the actual event once you guys arrive up in St. Joe?
Well, the students will need to help us set up all the telescopes and all that other apparatus that we're taking. They will be collecting data throughout, so it's not going to be just during that time of totality.
So you're taking telescopes and what else?
We have these devices that are called sunspotters, but basically it uses a mirror and it focuses the sun's light onto a white sheet that then you can watch the eclipse safely without having to be looking at it. And you'll be able to see some of the features, like the craters of the moon and such, as mm-hmm. it starts to cross
within
in
the
front
shadow,
of the sun.
Which
mm-hmm.
is,
well, that's exciting.
I just think it'll be so incredible.
Mm-hmm. But I assume all the kids have eclipse glasses by
yes.
this point.
Yes. We ordered them a year or so ago because we were kind of afraid. We have enough glasses for, I think, the entire district.
Yeah, the entire
right?
district has glasses for every student.
And what else will you be measuring when you're up there? You mentioned sunspotting and what else?
Well, I think we'll be looking to see if we can see the stars. I'm looking mm-hmm. at the sun's corona because that will be visible. That's not something that's visible during the day, every day, but only during the eclipse. And then just kind of looking at, you know, changes in the environment, animal behavior. Are they confused? Do they think it's nighttime? You know, just kind of some of that qualitative observation as well.
So I imagine as far as teaching moments go, this ranks about as high as you can get.
This is pretty high. And I think some of the things that, you know, in a total eclipse, we've never, ever had a total eclipse with this much totality in the United States or anywhere where there are as many people with imaging devices, everything from our cell phones to ability to share things. And a lot of times you don't know what might be discovered. I mean, it was the first time that astronomers knew that there was an unknown element, helium, was discovered during an eclipse.
Huh.
And so you're like, well, what are you going to discover? Well, we don't know. That's why it's a discovery.
And maybe your students will discover it.
We might.
Wouldn't that be something?
I'm so interested. There's a thing called shadow waves that occur, that it actually shadows, that it appears that you don't know where they're coming from, and they're almost ghost-like waves that will go across a surface. And if you have a white surface, so I want to cover the side of the bus with giant white paper and meter stick so we can see how far apart are these waves. And it's, I mean, you only see it during a total solar eclipse. And I'm pretty excited about the waves.
You know, and Marcia, when you have kids excited, that's half the battle, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. They've been asking all summer what the plans are. And I have parents that are emailing. They want to tag along. So it's definitely, you know, it's a family event.
Are parents coming?
We have some that have asked if they could join us. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking to a pair of teachers from the Olathe School District about buses going up from Olathe up to St. Joe to witness the lunar eclipse. After students have seen the total solar eclipse, what classwork will they be doing, and will they be writing reports or giving presentations about what they observed? Marcia, what do you see happening there?
Well, we are going to come up with a lab that they do have to work on while they're up there, and a way that they can record all of this data so that they can come back, and even while we're waiting in traffic on the way home, they can be working together with some lab partners to analyze the data, compare, contrast, what did it look like before, during, after, just kind of doing some of that data analysis.
But they actually have papers they're going to have to complete and turn in?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm very interested in having the kids collect photographs from this, because that's, I mean, we so often run schools like we would have 20 years ago, and now every kid has a device in their pocket that they can be their own video producer and, and whatever. So I want my kids to turn in a video presentation of this, because it's much faster and easier to share. And so that's, you know, I mean, we've never had an eclipse like this where we can collect that data,
right.
I'm sure.
And NASA has an app that you can download to be a citizen scientist. It's called GLOBE, and it will go live on August 18th. And anybody that's within the path of the eclipse can be sharing data with them.
You know, Rhonda, what do you hope kids come away with here? What's sort of the minimum that you hope they come away from this experience with?
Probably the same thing that you hope your kids come away from with any educational travel. I mean, an appreciation for the natural world, some awe and wonder for something new. Mm-hmm. I've had some people say, well, we'll see most of it here, or I'll watch the best coverage from NASA. And that's just not the same as watching something on National Geographic about Rocky Mountain National Park. It's very different when you're there, or Yellowstone. So I think that kind of appreciation, and an appreciation that this is an extremely rare event, even though we know that there's going to be a really a great eclipse, a total eclipse on April 8th, 2024, there's no guarantee that we're going to have decent weather. There's so if it's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing to see this particular event, that's what I want the kids to come out of.
You know, I'm wondering, Marcia, to what extent do you think kids these days have lost a little bit of appreciation for nature and what nature can do in this internet age that we live in?
Oh, it's definitely an issue, and that's why in my classes I try to get them outside doing hands-on science stuff as much as possible, because so often they sit inside on the internet playing games. You know, they're on the Xbox and they're interacting with somebody, you know, remotely, but that's not outside exploring nature and just getting that feel for what our Earth is capable of. It's an amazing place. We're really lucky to be here.
Have either of you witnessed an eclipse before?
Partial. In the 90s. Yeah. Here.
The half-baked ones. This is not half-baked. This isn't like what we're going to have this time.
Right. I have a friend that actually saw the one in 79 in Canada, and Marsha's dad's been an eclipse chaser for a long time. But this one, where we're going to be, the amount of time that the sun's covered, the totality is going to be, you know, 3 minutes. And that's
a long time.
That's a rarity, too.
Yeah, 3 minutes. I mean, all this for 3 minutes.
Right, and it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think it'll live up to expectations?
Oh, definitely. It's going to be awesome. I have goosebumps just thinking about it right now.
Yeah.
It's
because?
Because it's just awesome. How lucky are we that our moon is just the right size and just the right distance away from Earth to be able to cover the surface of the sun.
Right.
It's so cool.
Can you guys, as teachers, get some extra credit for doing all this?
No.
This is just
not a bit.
For
not
the
a
love
bit.
Of our students.
This is just for pure love of teaching. Well, good for you. Marcia Skozik is the facilitator of the Olathe Public Schools Geoscience Academy. Rhonda Reist is a chemistry teacher at Olathe North. Thanks for taking the time, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for good weather
Thank
here, guys.
You.
Thank
Thanks
you.
So much. Yeah, good luck.
Thanks.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date, coming to you live this morning from Park University up in Parkville. And newsflash, folks, the moon is just now beginning to creep across the face of the sun. If you look up at about the 1 o'clock side, at least from our vantage point, we're beginning to see all this eclipse beginning to happen here. Of course, you want to use your eclipse glasses as you go about viewing all this here today. I'm still joined here by Dr. Lynn Bondurant, former educational programs officer at NASA's Glenn Research Center. Now, Doctor, those teachers were so psyched to be going up to St. Joseph today. It must be music to your ears to hear educators making such an effort to bring their students, you know, what may be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity here.
Oh, I think those students that have those individuals as teachers are very fortunate.
Yes.
I think, they point out, it's going to be a life-changing event. I can remember on September the 13th, 1950, living in Claycomba, Missouri, I saw my first eclipse of the moon. That changed my whole life.
How?
That one event made me want to go into astronomy.
No kidding.
So I always think of Claycomba, September 13th, 1950.
How excited were you for that day?
Oh, it's a day you never forget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Robert Goddard. He had a favorite day when he launched his first liquid fuel rocket. And every year he would celebrate that special day. Hopefully these kids will celebrate that, and what they learn, they can carry with them all their lives.
You know, NASA, I should point out, NASA television is offering real-time coverage of this event from coast to coast. The program will include images of the eclipse from the International Space Station and other spacecraft, as well as from high-altitude aircraft and balloons and ground observations as well. Give us a sense of how far NASA has come, and again, you once worked there, to educate the public about space and from your first days there when the Office of Educational Programs was brand new.
Well, if you go back to the Space Act in 1958, NASA was created for the benefit of all at the time, they said, all mankind. And education was a key part of that. And I feel very fortunate. I've been a part of the education program at NASA for 50 years. And I can go back and I can see the changes of how we've gone to be more using more technology today than before.
Hmm.
And I'm just amazed at how NASA's changed. I always like to think of telescopes. And I remember in 1990, if you looked at we could only look back 6 billion years after the Big Bang, as Sir Fred Hoyle called it. By the year 2010, we could look back and see 480 million years after the Big Bang.
Hmm.
And next October, they're going to be launching the James Webb Telescope that you will be able to look back 200 million years after the Big Bang.
Looking back, you mean what by that?
Since the universe came into being.
Yeah.
So you can see how rapidly technology is changing, and the spacecraft are changing. And, for example, the Parker Solar Probe that's going to be going near the sun next year, it's going to unlock a lot of mysteries about the sun that we need to understand to make the Earth safe from such magnetic storms that we have.
I was going to say the Parker Solar Probe you just mentioned is described as the first mission to touch the sun.
Yeah.
Given that, how close will it get, and what is its mission? What are we going to learn here?
Well, the closest, and it'll only be it will go around the sun 24 times. And the closest it will get will be about 3.9 million miles from the surface of the sun.
And even then, I bet it's going to be awfully hot.
It will be hot. But one of the reasons that the probe can go there is that technology and material science has improved so much that they have a carbon composite now that they were going to put on the front of it that'll act like a nose that will protect all the instruments inside that will remain at room temperature. And so what they will be doing is going in and for the first time to the near source of the solar, to the corona, and trying to figure out, why does the sun send materials into space? What is the mechanism that the materials flow? And can we learn from that that we can use then to predict magnetic storms on Earth so we can protect ourselves as well?
When you say magnetic storms, what are you talking about?
Well, magnetic storms is if you look at the solar eclipse today, you're going to see the corona, and those little streamers are outlining the magnetic field of the sun. So when you look at those streamers, you're going to see the magnetic field. Like if you put iron filings on a piece of paper and have a magnet underneath it, they have a field too, and so that's the sun's magnetic field. And so plasma becomes magnetized, and it's sent out into space.
You know, I know you're getting ready to head over to Julian Field here at Park University to watch the eclipse yourself. You said you've witnessed one other one in your
yes.
lifetime, right?
Yes.
And how excited are you for this second one?
Oh, this one here, there's nothing, as you have heard already, there's nothing to compare a total eclipse of the sun. It's a life-changing event in that you think of different things than the normal things we think of everyday life when you can see something so spectacular.
What's your sense of how excited the students are here at Park University to see what might be a once-in-a-lifetime here?
I think, by and large, I've talked to students who are quite excited about it. There's probably some that I know people go on cruises to see the eclipses, and some of them stay in their staterooms and don't even come out. So you're always going to have some people, so what? But for those that are really excited, it's a life. It's just something you... In fact, from the year 1951 to 2000, there were only four total eclipses in the United States.
Hmm.
And from the year 2001 to the year 2050, there will only be four more total eclipses.
Wow.
So in that 100-year period, there have only been eight total eclipses of the sun. So it's a rare event that you get to see on land because most eclipses occur over the ocean.
And what will you be doing during the eclipse? What are you going to be, just looking at the sun, or what are you going to be doing? Looking at people around you, or what?
Well, I'm kind of excited about seeing the shadow approach. The shadow is going to be approaching at 1,485 miles an hour, which is 0.4 of a mile a second. That's how fast it's going to be coming. And I think the other thing is I'll be looking north, I'll be looking south, because it's not going to be dark. It's not going to be dark like night, but it'll be a bright blue perhaps, or a deep blue. So it's coming from the northwest, the shadow. And
there's things to look at, your point is, besides the sun and the moon themselves,
right.
You want to be looking around you a little bit.
Right, and to see the effects. And the teachers mentioned, I think they call them shadow waves. I call them shadow bands. But what people don't realize, sometimes the best place to see an eclipse is not at the central line, but it's towards the edge, because towards the edge, things are more emphatic.
Towards the edge of?
In other words, where the eclipse ends.
Ah.
In other words, you maybe want to be a third of the way in. The eclipse doesn't last as long, but the chromosphere around the sun will be much redder. Solar prominences, all that will be great.
Well, that's Dr. Lynn Bondurant. He's a former educational programs officer at NASA's Glenn Research Center and a proud alum of Park University. Thanks so much for taking some time today.
Oh,
we sure appreciate
I'm glad
it, Doctor.
To.
You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date, and you can follow me at Steve Kraske. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. On tomorrow's show, how inequality is remaking the American family. Once again, we want to thank the staff and students of Park University for hosting us today. They all did a great job and were so hospitable. Denny Alexander, Luke Martin, and Coy Duggar produce our program. Happy Eclipse Day, all. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.